I'm still sort of looking at the world through his lens and his words. And so I wanted to throw my ideas into the mix on this topic that we've been looking at for the last couple of weeks that Kokyo brought up about two paths in Zen, the path of healing and the path of liberation, and look at it through the words of Hongzhi. And it reminded me of several years ago when I went to the doctor for healing for back pain, and after a thorough examination he suggested that I lose 20 pounds. And it was a little jarring at first. It didn't seem like they were related. I wanted a certain kind of healing, and my doctor was looking at kind of a bigger picture of overall wellness and health. A few years later, I was working for the county, and they offered the mindfulness-based stress reduction training or practice over an 8-week period right there at work. And one thing about mindfulness-based stress reduction, MBSR, it's become pretty popular. It's become kind of standard of care in the medical world for things like chronic pain or recurrent anxiety. And it's given in wellness workplaces like I was doing to look at stress in work, sort of recurrent stress. And interestingly, it starts off with, I know you guys are all in here to look at stress at work and maybe have a little less stress at work, but maybe you can put that aside, that idea, for a while, and let's practice meditation, let's practice being with each other, let's practice mindful movement, and maybe we'll create a large openness, an open field together. I think it does a good job at that, such that stress has a little more room to move. And while we didn't talk about stress very much in those 8 weeks, I think our world got a little bigger. With those kind of meditative activities and community, the group was a big piece of it too. Relating to each other, perhaps in a different way, rather than over the cubicle or via email, we were relating to each other in the group in a little different way. I came to sit here about 25 years ago with an idea that I wanted a larger perspective on this whole, what's the name of the movie, Love and Pain and the Whole Damn Thing. I wanted a little larger view, a different perspective. And I took the Zazen instruction and paid attention to this posture that is an ancient posture even before Buddhism that opens kind of energy channels that help with integration and tranquility. I learned to follow my breath, which brought me into my body, into my whole body, not just up here in my head, but into my whole body. It was very quiet here, a more quiet environment than I was used to. So overall, I found the practice pretty good. Very healing. Promoting tranquility and accord in my body and mind. And over time, I think it started touching, like mindfulness-based stress reduction. My world was different, more spacious, and it was able to include the whole works, a little more breathing room for me and the whole works, or for the whole works that now included me. These are all I'm bringing in examples of a healing practice, our meditation and study of Buddhism can be a very healing path that includes healing for me and healing for more harmony in my environment. And it also can be a liberative path where the whole works are included, liberation along with all beings. There's a Zen teacher in Minnesota, Byakuren Judith Regier, who wrote the introduction for a recent book entitled The Eightfold Path, another famous path in Buddhism. This was a series of essays by women Zen teachers, edited by G.Q. Cheryl Wolfer, who has put together several books on different Zen topics of women, current women teachers in America. And I've met Byakuren Judith Regier a few times. I really like her writing. I like her energy in person. And I really liked this introduction to this book, The Eightfold Path, in which she pretty much covers the Four Noble Truths. And she explained her big one of her big aha moments was, she studied with Katagiri Roshi in Minnesota for years. She was one of the early students of his there in the 70s. And I think her ordination and transmission was with one of Katagiri's heirs. And her persistent question after years of study was, I think I'm still suffering. After all of this study, what really is this reduction in suffering that is supposed to come about? And her aha moment was reading a lecture by Katagiri Roshi, where she felt that what he was teaching all along was not so much liberation from suffering, but the resolve to be open to suffering, to be able to be with suffering, in much the same way that I spoke about early, to have a bigger world that can include suffering as well as the whole works. So another look at, a healing path and a path of liberation. Excuse me. This healing path, in addition to this sitting posture, might even include working with the Buddhist precepts: not killing, not lying, not slandering, not being possessive, and creating harmony in among the people that you're with. It might be, looking at the self and really trying to see what are the habits of mind that I have that might be a barrier to the harmony in my environment, or might cause suffering for myself or others. I think Kokyo and Jean both talked about there's no clear line between the path of healing and the path of liberation. They can overlap significantly. Maybe this path of healing can be like the causes and conditions of the path of liberation. These are just some of my thoughts. Maybe we might, as Kokyo said in that first lecture a couple of weeks ago, we might really set out saying, I've been really distracted today. I've really got a lot on my mind. I really do need this period of Zazen for some healing, to really kind of focus my energy, or just lower my energy, get out of my head a little bit, and come peacefully into my body. We might, in the period of Zazen, go from healing ourselves, settling down after a long day, and then finally having the vigor and attention to be able to turn the light inward and land on that source of thought, land on that attention itself, the origin of all thoughts. Maybe just land there and be able to watch those thoughts before they get formed into fixed ideas. Maybe we can just settle with them as an image that's used. Settle with them on this mirror of the mind that's just reflecting, that's not elaborating, but just reflecting. Those images on a mirror sliding all over the mirror, coming and going as causes and conditions arise without being held on to. Maybe I can just settle into that mirror mind be with the images on the mirror. The mirror image is a good one for, the images of the mind and the mirror, or the images on the mirror and the mirror are not separate. So it's that real, this liberative path is sometimes called ultimate reality or non-dual awareness, no separation between subject and object. I think you need to be pretty settled. I think you need to be healed of your distracting days to be able to settle, to be able to become this mind that just reflects and doesn't hold on, doesn't elaborate, just holds and accepts and is always in harmony with whatever causes or conditions arise. So Hung Zhur. A person practicing the way subtly goes beyond words and thoughts. Maybe this first line in this paragraph is pointing towards liberative practice, the path of liberation. Then you can enter samadhi in every sense dust and gather the 10,000 forms in the single seal. We have the opportunity to use every object thoughts, our sensations, the things in the world, glasses, books, really, really looking at them. These are the sense dusts. Anything that comes in through these senses can help us get into this non-dual samadhi. just looking at the, just focusing on the causes and conditions that out of which the phenomena in the world arises. All filtered through our senses, which are not separate from our mind, going the other direction, meditating, landing, sitting on the source of these thoughts that are just reflecting and accepting everything without elaboration. When we do elaborate, there are the glasses, there are the thoughts and the opinions that have filtered through this very complicated, complex mind that we have. So it's frequently said that this non-dual awareness, the source, is the source of all the objects that we see, that we think about, that we hear, that we touch, elaborations of our mind. But starting right there at that consciousness that we can just sit with in meditation, without elaboration, that is the source for all these objects. So we can use the objects in either direction to enter this samadhi, what I have been calling the samadhi of a thousand dusts, but it's actually the samadhi in every sense dusts, and a gathering of the 10,000 forms in this single posture, in this single period of meditation. All the things in the world are just right here in our mind, being reflected in the mirror of our mind. So we practice the way beyond words and thoughts, and then we can enter this samadhi of every sense dust and gather the 10,000 forms in a single seal. We discontinue the leaks and do not act on them. The leaks are our ego that comes up and might start elaborating the images on the mirror, elaborating them in a habitual way that we, you know, every time this image appears on the mirror, I respond this way. I have this thought. I have this opinion. I like it or I don't like it, or I don't think much of it. So this practicing the way includes discontinuing this ego, this elaboration. This is the understanding and the affair of us monks. This is where we originally dwell. So this landing on the source of thoughts, landing on this non-dual awareness that is our original home, according to Hong Zhu. And we might need to practice getting into our body, following the breath, letting go of any tension that's developed over the course of the day, going from distracted mind of following the rules of the road and thinking about work and family and school, letting all that go, and doing these practices that the Buddha taught 2,500 years ago to feel whole. And then we might direct our meditative energy, but to turn the light around, to land on attention itself, instead of reaching out with our attention to the birds outside, or reaching out with our attention to the candle on the altar. Can we turn that attention and move towards awareness itself and just sit there in the way that a mirror just can hang on the wall and reflect everything without elaboration, letting it come and go, not rejecting anything. And this is where we originally dwell. I think I also wanted to say about this samadhi in every sense dust. This is an echo that's found, or this is echoing other teachers in our lineage. I'm thinking of Dogen when he wrote, to study Buddhism is to study the self. That's not so different than this samadhi, this one-pointed attention on all the objects that get sensed in our eyes, ears, nose, entering this path is about looking at your life pretty carefully, and your life is your sense organs, how you experience the world, and the habits that you formed over the years, experiencing the world over and over again in the same way. So this isn't a special state that gets developed. It does take practice. It takes practice to calm down, no matter what spiritual path, or even going to the gym, calming down and focusing on your body. It takes some practice, but it's not a special state. It's just this body and mind. It's just my life. And that's the entry gate to the path of healing and the path of liberation. Just this life, studying my life carefully. Hongzhir says, a monk regards the 10,000 things of the world as his inheritance. This isn't a possessive, everything I see is mine. This is, I've got everything right here in my mind. I'm not separate from everything that my senses are experiencing. So I like this word inheritance, a non-dual inheritance. I'm finally not separate. That ego has died and left me everything in the world. And I'm not separate from it anymore. It's not separate from me. It's not separate from my mind. It is my mind. These 10,000 things are my inheritance. Subject and object can be like images in a mirror, the moon on the water, blended together with nothing left out. The moon on the water is another mirror metaphor. First, do not establish your own identity. Then beings will not impose their own causes and conditions. If I'm not leaking, if this ego isn't this wall that's meeting everything that comes my way, I don't experience it as, you know, this banging on the wall or something from outside that's intruding on this noble inside. If I don't establish this, my own identity, then things won't impose their causes and conditions. It's not going to be causes and conditions that happen to this ego. It is just going to be the mirror that accepts everything and doesn't build it into anything solid. It just accepts anything, lets it slide on, lets it slide off. Only in the wholeness of things, only in this wholeness are things not isolated. So that mirror mind that he described, subject and object can be like images in a mirror. Only that mirror mind, which is whole, the objects, the appearance of objects aren't separate from the mirror. Only then is that wholeness. And you know, I think he's describing the path of liberation here. But interestingly, healing, the word for healing is also the same root as the word for being whole. Healing and whole are really related. So this is another place that I think intuitively we know how this path of healing and the path of liberation really overlap, really aren't totally distinct, really have an overlapping quality. We looked at this next paragraph in Hongzhi quite a bit. Emptiness is inherently without characteristics. This our original awareness, this mirror mind, is also called emptiness. No inherent existence. It's hard to describe turning the light inward and landing on mirror mind. Those are all metaphors. Those are all kind of poetic ways to describe something that is wordless. What did Hongzhi say? It's beyond words and thoughts, this landing on awareness, landing on the emptiness of mirror mind. It's without characteristics. What do you say about a mirror? It's just reflecting. You can't reach in and pick up the cup that's reflected in the mirror. You know, so you can't say that a mirror has a handle. You can't say that a mirror is light or dark. I mean, I know we can say if a mirror is clean or not clean, but you can only take these metaphors so far. They don't go everywhere. Emptiness, this mirror, this awareness is inherently without characteristics. On its own, illumination emerges from causes and conditions. Hong Zhe describes this turning the light inward or taking the backward step, which are metaphors that we've heard to describe this meditation. Hong Zhe calls his meditation silent illumination and describes this empty field that's cultivated in this meditation as clear and bright, illuminating. But this emerges from causes and conditions on its own. When we do that, take that backward step, when we are actually taking on the practice of studying Buddhism by studying ourself, the way Dogen says, I really want to study this. Dogen uses the word penetrate. I really want to penetrate this mind and body. I really want to study this carefully. When we take on that practice of looking at the appearance of causes and conditions, illumination arises on its own. When we can calm down, when we don't say to ourselves, but when we have realized that sitting on the source of our thoughts, reflections in the mirror, when we've realized that, that's where Hong Zhe says that illumination in this bright, empty field arises on its own. When we take on this practice of causes and conditions, of looking, of penetrating these causes and conditions. Constantly live apart from the surface appearance, and that's being called a Buddha ancestor. Sitting at the source of our thoughts, turning awareness towards awareness itself, is not living on the surface of things, where I'm waiting for the traffic light to turn, where I'm waiting for the results of an election, where I'm marching in the pride parade. This is a practice of living apart from the surface and really dwelling in my original home. All Buddhas arrive here and regard this as ultimate truth. They respond to transformations and disperse their bodies as flowers, leaves, roots, and dusts. So, here we all are, sitting with all Buddhas and ancestors. on this the source of thoughts, the source of all phenomena, and this very elaborate, complicated mind might take one of these thoughts from its source and turn it into the beautiful umbrellas that Rachel is going to make for this weekend's march. It might turn it into the sound of your loved one cooking dinner for you in the kitchen. So this is the Buddha's respond to these transformations of mind with nothing other than these are the flowers and leaves and dusts and roots of all the Buddhas that have been meditating with you, inseparable from you, not different from you. It's hard to talk about. I'm not picturing anything. Our original home is transformed by this beautiful mind into all the things of the world, and they're nothing but the mind and body of the Buddhas and ancestors. And looking at our glasses, looking at our books, looking at our thoughts, looking at our opinions in this way is wisdom. This wisdom enters all time, the three times, and these 10,000 ways that we can take Buddha mind and turn it into phenomena, the 10,000 changes, the 10,000 ways the mind turns Buddha into phenomena do not disturb us. Each dust, each pair of glasses is not outside of us. It's just our Buddha mind that's turned this awareness into the objects of the world. This is a marvel beyond all the texts that we could read, beyond this marvelous text, beyond Dogen, beyond the sutras. This is a marvel. Where could you hold on to the shadowy world? So if this is the leaves, the flowers, and the roots of Buddha mind, and it's not separate from me, my awareness, from the Buddha nature, you know, what use is there to hold on to them so tightly, to call them mine, to call this my opinion? They're never not the Buddha mind, the Buddha body. And when the Buddha provisionally taught us that the source of our suffering was grasping, holding on to things tightly, when we can enter this samadhi of 10,000 dusts and see the glasses, see our opinions, see the banners, see the news as nothing but Buddha mind and body, we're not holding on to that shadowy world. so tightly. So this is how I think Hong Zhur might explain the path of healing. Really looking carefully at this body and mind, really appreciating this body and mind, really helping this body and mind live in a little more spaciousness and openness. And then I think these are also the words that Hong Zhur might use for the path of liberation, where he says that concepts, but although we're not talking about concepts, but ideas, concepts, how we have to talk about emptiness or non-dual awareness, and having nothing to hold on to, so how can there be the cause of suffering if there's nothing to hold on to, because it's all Buddha's leaves, roots, branches, and dust. These are Hong Zhur's words for the path of liberation. We've got time for just a couple of questions. Maybe over these 3 weeks you've thought more about these two paths and where they're different and where they're overlapping and not so different. What's come up for you in these 3 weeks, Andrew? I think you have to encourage wholeheartedly that healing path. 'Cause I think, you know, we've experienced how that might evolve into the path of liberation. I certainly was on the path of healing for years and years before things started making sense, or the way Hong Zhur says, illumination emerges through studying causes and conditions, you know, really looking at your life, which is very much part of the healing path. What is this self that's sitting here? Maybe that's more of a liberative question.
What is this leg that is broken?
Yeah, or what is this relationship that's broken? What is this ego that shoots me in the foot all the time? From that might emerge Byakuren was a priest, you know, when she had her insight, her aha moment, that, oh, this isn't about getting rid of suffering. This is about not turning away. This is about being able to look at suffering squarely. This is able to. This is about being with suffering. This is about the space that holds suffering and the whole works. So encourage that practice of healing. Corinne. Oh, thank you.
When I was doing one meditation that also was landing on the mirror, is the activity of knowing a part of that, or also not being separated, is there an activity of knowing? And if there is a knowing without the name of anything?
I think the image that I came up with when reading and studying with everybody was that we set up the causes and conditions for turning the light around, or the mirror mind, the way that we set up the causes and conditions for falling asleep. You know, we get into bed, we turn off the lights, we get warm, and, you know, we don't really know the moment that we fall asleep, but we have a pretty good idea that we have landed in bed and we've been asleep when the alarm goes off. So I think there's, I want to shamelessly, use some of Kokyo's images. I think we can, that awareness is aware of the images on the mirror, but if the knowing is that it's not separate from the mind, so it's not a dual knowing. It's being, you know, this isn't that there's no separation, the school children noise outside is not over there coming in. It is awareness. Yeah.
And then the illumination, which then creates causes and conditions. Can we say that those causes and conditions are reactive?
The illumination is resting in this empty field of dusts that aren't outside of myself, dusts that aren't separate from the mirror. That's the illumination. And I think it's described as a positive term because I think that's why we keep coming back to this posture, mind, and body of Buddha is because of this feeling that that this nurtures us, that this is nurturing, and that it's not emptiness, null and void, but there's some brightness there, there's some clarity there. I think these are just positive images for this non-conceptual attention. Maybe we can talk more outside. May our meditation today illuminate our practice, and may this illumination go on endlessly. Beings are numberless.